We've heard the Isaiah passage. Isaiah envisioned a time when God was so in love with the world that He would never give up on the world, and that He would, through the people He chose, continue to work until one day swords were melted into plowshares. There was no more war. But Isaiah was not alone in that. As we have learned this season, as our church family has studied the Christmas story according to Matthew, we see that Matthew was expressly interested in the old story, because it was out of the old story that the new story came. And he continued to utilize these old voices, quoting Isaiah and Jeremiah and Micah and Hosea, and seeing that in their words, the fulfillment of what was happening now in the life of this little baby was part of God's plan. But that didn't end with the Gospels. The early Christian church used this same story to remind themselves that God's love had come. It was later that Paul picked it up in a message to a church that he loved in Galatia. In Galatians chapter 4, Paul wrote, "But when the right time came, God sent His Son, born of a woman, subject to the law. God sent Him to buy freedom for us who were slaves to the law, so that He could adopt us as His very own children. And because we are His children, God has sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, prompting us to call out, 'Abba, Daddy, Father.' Now you are no longer a slave, but God's own child. And since you are God's own child, God has made you His heir." May God bless the reading of the Apostle Paul in the New Testament. You know, it seems like I'm getting more and more frustrated with Christmas, because each year it seems a little tougher to unwrap Christmas. Have any of you been frustrated by shrink wrap? You know, that packaging that's so tight that you can't tear it? All attempts to tear it fail. And how about that fiber strapping tape that sometimes the knife won't even cut? And then there's those epoxy adhesives that could carry a ton of weight without giving ground. You know, I've got grandkids and nieces and nephews, and trying to unwrap Christmas and make it work seems tougher all the time, doesn't it? One guy wrote a poem about it. He was so frustrated. He said, "Hats off to you makers of gadgets galore. Hooray for your shipping and stackage. But why do you make it so hard more and more to take all your wares from the package? Your cartons and bags I can't cut with a knife. The strength of your cardboard, fantastic. I'm sure that I've spent easily half my life just fighting my way into plastic. Your label's resistant any solvent on earth. Your tape is as tough enough as an ox. I've paid for my purchase, but what is it worth if I can't get it out of the box?" You know, it is true. Christmas sometimes gets tough to unwrap with all the expectations, all the everything that's mounted on it. But God makes unwrapping Christmas easy. Galatians 4 clearly says what Christmas is about. It's about God freeing us from the obligations of the law. Paul uses adoptive language to give us a very stark contrast. It's not that we are no longer slaves to the law. We are now children of God. And there is a big difference between being a slave and being a family. You see, a servant must do what he or she is told. But servants are servants. They serve. Whereas children, well, in the ideal form, they grow up understanding that they're part of a family. And they serve the best interests of the family. They behave and act according to their identity as family members. They see themselves as participants in a relational system that's bigger than themselves, and they learn to give and to receive in the midst of it. But this metaphor of family for Christ followers begs an important question. Why? Questions that every Christian family member must answer for him or herself. Why do we live the way we do? Why do we give our money sacrificially to the church? Why do we serve in the church? Why do we stay faithful to the people in our lives because of the commitments that we've learned from being part of the family? Or maybe Paul would ask it in the contrast. Why don't we? You see, in short, we're called to live as Christians not because we're rule followers, but because we are children of God. There's a massive shift that Paul states in this brief passage. A sense of obligation is left. Rules have much to say about our actions. But as one person noted, they rarely shape our attitudes, our thoughts, or our emotions. A relationship, however, is far more influential on how we really live, isn't it? We really live according to the relationships in our lives and how we value them. In George Eliot's classic novel, Silas Marner, he tells the story of a bitter old man who's been unlucky in love and who has been shunned by his community. So what does he do? He shrivels up inside and moves to an isolated cottage on the edge of the town and ekes out a living. He uses his loom to shuttle back and forth and create cloth day by day, ignoring any social relationships, except to go into town to sell his wares to get gold, which has become the only thing that Silas Marner values. But one day, while he's gone into town, a thief breaks in, lifts up the floorboards, finds his hiding place and his precious gold, and steals all of it. Marner comes back. He discovers the very thing that his whole life is focused on is gone. Hoping against hope that someone will come back and return his money, day after day, he waits, staring out in the evening from his porch, out of his cottage, into the landscape. Well, Silas is hoping for a returned fortune. But instead, he gets a very different treasure. One evening, while he is bemoaning his existence and staring into the cold winter night, a little blonde-haired girl, whose homeless, opium-addicted mother has just died in the snow, toddles toward the light of his doorway and walks in as though she owns the place. He stares at this little golden curled girl as she toddles over to his hearth where the stones are warm and the fireplace is beckoning her cold body. And she lays down and falls asleep. Silas is stunned. He stares for so long at this little girl. And all of a sudden it hits him. gold, his own gold, brought back to him as mysteriously as it had been taken away. He felt his heart beat violently. The heap of gold seemed to glow as it heaved breath after breath. He leaned forward and at last stretched forth his hand, but instead of the hard coin with the familiar resisting outline that he had so deeply treasured, his fingers encountered the soft, warm curls. The rest of the story tells about the transformation of Silas Marner. The melting of his heart as he adopts this toddler and becomes both father and mother to her. Plundered of his life savings, robbed of all he once held dear, Silas Marner is granted a sign of God's love. Not a babe in a manger, but a child stretched out upon the warm stones of his hearth. Eliot concludes in Silas's words with this comment. He writes, "In the old days, there were angels who came and took men by the hand and led them away from the city of destruction. We see no white-winged angels now. But yet men are led away from threatening destruction. A hand is put in theirs, which leads them forth gently toward a calm and bright land, so that they may look no longer backward. And the hand may be the hand of a child." Silas Marner discovered what Paul knew, that relationships are the greatest treasure in the world. And they're more powerful than rules. You can see that in the way that children grow up. What parent hasn't had their child at one point or another grab the toy out of another child's hand? And the other child begins to fuss, and the parent says, "Give it back." And then he says, "Go to them and say, I'm sorry." And the child goes, "Sorry." And the parent looks at them and says, "Say it like you mean it. Sorry." "No, say it like you mean it. Sorry." Now that child is obeying rules, right? And rules are important, but they don't transform us. What transforms us is learning about the relationship. So fast forward that young child into adulthood, and now that young adult has their own child. And on the way out of a hurried, quick day, she accidentally slams the door on her child's fingers. And horrified, she looks at the child and she says, "I'm sorry," with all the empathy and all the love and all the power that a relationship can give that word. You see, rules, as Paul stated, only go so far in changing us. The law, what was told to Moses on Mount Sinai, and how Israel needed to behave, was very valuable for a time when they were young. But the power to transform is a relationship that God intended from the very beginning. When God enters our hearts, He gives us His Spirit, Paul says. It's what one Christian therapist called God giving us a sanctified gut. We have a sense of who we're called to be and what we're called to do. And we do it not out of rules and regulations, but we do it because we are heirs of God. We are in the family. We are children beloved by God. It's a whole different dynamic. The world can be transformed by family, by love. That's the story of Christmas. Comedian George Carlin once said, "I have a plan for world peace through formal introductions." He said the idea is that everyone in the world would be required to meet everyone else in the world formally, at least once. You'd have to look the person in the eye, shake hands, repeat their name, and try to remember one physical characteristic about them. My theory is this. If you knew everyone in the world personally, you'd be less inclined to fight them in war. Who? The Malaysians? Are you kidding? I know those folks. They're good folk. It's true. When we see the world as family, life is different. When we see a God who has adopted us, we are part of that love. And that is the story of Christmas. You know, J. Barry Shepherd once said, what I thought was a brilliant observation. He called it the miracle renewed. He said, it would be as easy to criticize the waste, the trash, the sad attempt to buy affection in the splash of wild extravagance, most of our Christmases. Yet for all of that, this is a genuine time of family fun, a day when games are played together, books are read, and puzzles are puzzled, a meal is eaten family style, smiles and kisses are in plentiful supply, a day when memories are brought forth, dusted off, hand it around. May I find in moments such as these an echo of those tidings of great joy. I wonder, would the Christ child, if he sat beneath our sparkling Christmas tree, condemn us as crass and empty of all he saw? Or might he laugh and cheer and clap his sticky hands with glee to see his miracle take place again and life become abundant, shared of joy and love. Interesting to ponder as we muddle our way through Christmas. May the God of the joy and peace of Christmas make his sticky hands be part of our lives. Let's pray. Lord, thank you that your love is so rich that you even made yourself available to us. May we carry on that family tradition that you so long ago started. And may people see in us joy and peace because of your love for us and because we are your children. Amen.